Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce.
With the intent of steadfast dedication, what has just popped into my head are the words of Thomas Paine. He wrote them literally on a drumhead with the Continental Army of the newly declared independent United States. And he wrote them in a time when, in a few weeks, the effort would have been abolished. If you realize how close this fledgling nation was to falling apart, the very first winter of the Revolutionary War, the War of Independence. His pamphlet was called The Crisis. He wrote that now is the time. The spring soldier, the sunshine patriot, may not support this, but it is a cause worth fighting for. We can see this as a cause, as something worth fighting for. At least we believe that we can see that. That's at least a start. And that the struggle that ensued was worth it. And the nation that came after that was worth it. But it did involve struggle. People beginning that process signed up in their state militias for short terms of service. Few remember now that if Washington hadn't crossed the Delaware, hadn't made a raid that was successful, there would have been no Continental Army 5 days later. All their terms of service were up. They were sick of freezing with no supplies. Supplies promised, of course. Rewards promised in the future. You might get paid someday if we win. They were tired of it all. They needed to be reminded that they weren't fighting for pay. They weren't fighting for have a good job as a soldier to be given all your supplies you need to be taken care of. They were fighting for something larger, ideals. They were fighting to transform this land they had worked so hard to do something with into something else. Well, we know how the story turned out, at least largely, that the army didn't disband. Everybody didn't go home on the 1st of January of the new year. They had one of their very few victories, crossing the river, making a raid on a garrison, a surprise raid. They weren't the best soldiers in the world, our Continental Army. But they dared to cross the ice, dared to fight the elements, and did win. Time, British just thought it was kind of childish, silly. Okay, so you attacked some of our allies, some of our mercenaries on Christmas when they weren't all together, and you won. You know, it doesn't exactly show you as being really a grand army, really impressive or anything. It's just a little unimportant skirmish. And they treated it as such. It fought much bigger foes, longer battles. But this one little act helped turn things around. Thomas Paine's words in The American Crisis became one of the most widely read pieces of writing in the world at the time, calling people to stay in there. We aren't doing this for these other silly reasons we might come up with. We're doing it for something deeper. When we look at our spiritual lives, we see with an even shorter view, usually, than these soldiers did, or the people of the nation did at the time. In fact, when we're not being spiritual materialists, we're being sort of spiritual prosaic folk. Well, let's just get what bare minimum that we need in spirituality, or we actually survive for a long time without it. We'll get back to it later, when the kids are grown up or something. This job isn't so demanding. Some other things. There's always things in the world that would pull us all of our time, all of our energy, to serve them, to do this way, to go that way. Other than focusing on and in the small part on what is most important, ourselves in the deepest sense, the growth of who we are, becoming who we are. That takes a long-term commitment. It doesn't happen overnight. It isn't all fireworks and celebrations. It's a lot of nights in Valley Forge. And it's a difficult process. And we let our ideas get in the way too much. And all these other concerns, just like what was going on in the Continental Army. You know, not getting paid enough. Not getting the spiritual rewards we were seeking by following our own journey. Well, there's no other rewards out there. You can't steal somebody else's. I mean, you can live in a fantasy. You can read about someone else's journey or their take on what a journey would be like. You can lose yourself to some shocking amount in like the ideas of a guru or something, in a negative sense. But you can never really lose yourself, and those things are never yours. In fact, these dynamics, the psyche, allow these dangerous, charismatic types to at least seem to fulfill some of our needs, or a way of hiding the fact that they're taking away from us, and taking away from our journey. So there is no other thing out there. It's really amazing. You say that we're on a trek across a desert, or trek up a mountainside, and it's not all sunshine and light, and not all fruit trees along the way, then people look at you funny. Because you're not selling them something, and they're looking to buy. They're sort of consumers of spirituality as well. You'd rather pick a path that's going to have places to stay along this mountain climb. In fact, if it's not a mountain climb, that's kind of, you know, exertion. Maybe we can just kind of meander around a valley, follow a river. There's always water and something to eat. Even if it isn't going the direction we really need to be going, it's much more pleasant. Let's go that way instead. There is a real path we can't be consumers of. You're always on it. You can't pick and choose. You can't go church down the corner and be on a different path. It's always your path. Whenever you start a new path, a new process, a new tradition, there's usually a whole lot of new material that comes up in your spiritual life. You know, there's more bangs and whistles, more fireworks. It doesn't matter what path you're on. After a while, it's going to dry up. And you'll have different periods, different times. Always dry seasons. Always winters. And then, there's the spring. It may not be what you expect, what you want out of this. But it's always what you need. And you're first looking into living a spiritual life. I think there's a lot of release valves that opened up. And you feel all of this energy. You see this whole dimension of life that you've been neglecting. Then when you're living it, well, spiritual life is a life, and life is life. You go through cycles, you go through phases, you go through periods, and it's a constant process of growth, development. It's a long journey, a long game. You're not given time off for good behavior or bad behavior. You're not given bonus points for anything in particular. It's this long growth process. It's life. It's the only real life. Or if you are engaged in your spiritual life, that's where the élan vital, the vital force, flows forth from one's spiritual life. And that influences the rest of life. Without that, I don't know how people live. Must really distract themselves something fierce to think that the point of life is a new car or something. Often when you know, at least when I have encountered these people and gotten through the chinks in the armor, you're really quite dissatisfied, quite afraid, quite unfulfilled. So they don't have this spring bubbling forth, it says in the Gospel of Thomas. You drank from that spring, the same spring I have measured out. When we are a part of that spiritual life, when we flow out from that center in our outward lives as well, there is a freedom. There is perspective. There is also play. Play is very important. It's amazing how many times we get aspects and hints of play in the Gnostic scriptures. Because if you have a different center and a different perspective, you're not stuck in this grim world alone, then there are aspects of play to being here. Gospel days from different passages from the Gospel of Thomas. First one, Mary asks, what are your disciples like? Jesus answers, they're like children who have installed themselves in a field that isn't theirs. They're living on land that they know isn't theirs. They're playing a game. And when the owners of the field come back, they take off their clothes in order to release the field back to the owners. This is living out of this higher perspective. We're living in a way where we're trying to control the world, trying to arrange the world so we're never going to be uncomfortable or out of money or have to face the fact that we don't know what we're doing or are afraid of dying. If we're living on that level, then there's no play involved. It's always a matter of grimly trying to protect what we have. It's like the gospel from last week, which is the rich fool, the person who plans out what to do with his harvest and then he dies. It's got lots of good financial planning involved, but you're dead, so I guess you can't carry that out. These real consequences happen regardless of your plans, regardless of trying to make for yourself a little oasis that won't be touched by the desert that's all around. Well, those never work. If you live out of that center, if you stay in part, you don't have to consume the whole of yourself. That's part of why the spiritual path is so enlivening. It doesn't consume all of your time. It gives you lots of energy to do other things. It gives some aspect of play. So, just as this saying, you know, who are your disciples like? Like kids playing in the field. They know they don't own the field. They're not trying to get a deed to the field. They're not claiming squatter's rights when the owner comes back. Weren't squatter's rights in the ancient world anyway. But there's no sense of ownership, no feeling of ownership at all. Quite the opposite. The owners are going to insist on having their field back? Sure, it's yours. Not only that, this clothes we were using to play farmer, these forms we have, we'll leave those too. So we're free completely from this game. We're not bound by your actions and your ownership at all. You can own this field. You can ask for it back. It's yours. You have no hold on us. This is the way to escape the grasps of the archons, the powers of the world. It's to be at play in the world. To have our true home be transcendent, something more, something else. So that when the forces of the world do conspire to destroy, to take back, to enforce their powers on us, they can't. Gnostic scriptures talk about being invisible to the powers. Someone who has undergone all of the mysteries can just pass through all the spheres of existence without the powers of them even noticing they're there. They just go through. There's no struggle. There's nothing to overcome. It's not like the end of a video game. You're fighting all the bad guys. Nope, just no resistance. So you've already divested yourself of that they can get you with. It's only our participation in this that they can hold us on, that they can enforce their power upon us with. Lesson for today talks about Christ, the creative Logos, coming into the world, being sent into the world, and being given light, which is the power of Gnosis, that is consciousness. We must be awake and aware to live a spiritual life, to try to live out our true nature, our real humanness, rather than our biological mammal humanness. That's not going away unless, you know, it goes away completely. But we're trying to live out of a deeper center, include all of that around us within that outflow. And that requires consciousness, requires attention, requires not just paying attention for a couple minutes, having a low attention span, being there for the long haul. Again, you know, this is steadfast dedication that is required. It isn't that you don't get to take a break, but it's a regular return. Spiritual practice, in a lot of ways, boil it down to consciousness meeting a spiritual intention with some regularity. That's all it is. Different forms may work better, not as well. You may need more of a structure to be able to do it regularly, but its essence is just that. Consciousness, intent, chronic return. Time again. Time again, return. And that does bring about a change, because that is the means of Gnosis. And many different forms of spiritual practice can be part of that. The liturgy in our tradition is the central form of spiritual practice. It's not all of spiritual practice. What we do individually is also spiritual practice. We combine all of this as the means of our journey on the spiritual path. People like to point out the fact that you don't need any of this stuff to go on your spiritual path, and you don't. You don't need a car or an airplane to go from here to California either. It's just a lot more convenient if you have a vehicle. And you get further, much more comfortable, and it isn't as onerous to have some sort of a vehicle, to have something that will regularly return you to a focus on your journey. In the grand scheme of things, can you leave your spiritual journey? No. You can't give up on it. You can't put it on the back burner or any of that. What you have the option of is not paying attention to it, not having a practice to go along with it, not giving it the time and energy. And so, kind of starves, shrivels, but it's still there. You can't move away from the responsibility of it. You can't hand it to anybody else. It isn't something that you can give to another person or an institution or a tradition. It's always your path, your process. And you must own that. Amazing to me when people come to us as if we were these more all-encompassing religious traditions that have an answer for everything, that has specific things that you need to do to get into heaven, you know. Your heaven passport needs to be stamped here and signed in triplicate and so forth. And a whole lot of stuff that you shouldn't do if you want to get in, so much so that probably better off in a coma on life support if you, you know, have your passport stamped, and then you can pass through to heaven with no problems. Talk about bare existence. On life support in a coma as you're living your most God-oriented life, so you don't break any of these commandments or rules. But in our tradition, we don't have that all-encompassingness. We understand that it is your path. And you must understand that, too. And whether you follow your path with us, somebody else, still always going to be your path. And that's a very different orientation, a different understanding. That requires us all to be grown-ups in the spiritual sense, to be adults, to be responsible for our own paths, to follow them as much as we're able, to go through this life, come to the end of our lives, which we never really know when we're going to come to the end of them. But the thing that I think of that would be the greatest tragedy of a human life is to come to the end of your life and have some deep realization that, you know, all that time when I thought I was being a spiritual person, I was just full of it. I was full of myself. I was just pretending to fit in. Whatever. You sort of come to the end of your life and realize that you've been fooling yourself. And to follow the real path means that, yeah, it's going to lead you through the desert. It's going to lead you up into the mountains. It's going to be tough. But a real path, it leads somewhere. And you on that path are transformed by that journey. You gain the gnosis of that. And you become free. That this dedication does pay off. It's not going to pay off now. It may not pay off in any way that we can recognize or expect. But going on that journey, we become free. Free to live as we truly are. And in this world, freedom, in that deepest sense, is what is most precious. Look at the war I opened these reflections considering. It was about freedom, about liberty. People were called back to the long battle by considering liberty, by considering freedom. They returned to their senses, and they won that wake-up call. So we must always try to be awake. Part of the gospel for today is from Thomas, who talks about being awake, girding your loins, not letting a thief in the night tunnel into the house, take away everything. And that is in our readings for today, right after the children are releasing the field. So that might strike you as being a bit of a weird juxtaposition, that followers should be like children who don't own the field and release it back to the owners. It should also be like somebody who knows that a thief in the night is coming and doesn't let him take everything. But the thief of the night isn't about material things. It's about losing who we are, losing all this we've attained on our journey so far, losing our focus, losing our very selves. Say, theoretically, abstractly, we can't do that, but practically, in our experience, we can. We can become overwhelmed. We can forget all of what is most important to us now, if some huge thing happens in life, and might be left afterwards feeling adrift, feeling like we've lost so much. So, the way we keep this is to be awake. Earlier story doesn't say the kids fell asleep and let them take the field. No, they were awake. They willingly walked off. We are aware, conscious. We can pay attention to what is trying to come in. It's trying to be a destructive force upon us. And also be free from that. That's the similarity with the children in the field. They were free from the powers of the owners because they walked away. The story of the thief in the night. The owner of the house is free from the power of the thief because he's awake. He's aware of it. So that power cannot impact upon him. We are awake when facing the world. Its powers won't just grab us, just tear us apart. Because that's so much what they try to do. If we're not fitting certain patterns in the world, then we are an enemy, at least a perceived enemy, by many of the powers of the world. And Gnostic tradition has always held that we're not at home here, and there are many forces that would be very happy to see us in a higher state of ignorance, a lower state of consciousness, imprisoned, lost. We must follow these things. It isn't a matter of doing it for a short time. So many people begin a path, and a few months later, where are they? Well, they begin this whole large story for themselves. Notions of becoming not just students, but also becoming teachers. Becoming not just people who are on the path, but guides. But they don't even bother to go on the path to begin with, or to be a student to learn how to teach. And so what they're trying to do is live a fantasy story, rather than their story. If we focus on our story, we will have the discipline, the focus, to carry it out. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade. It won't just be a flash in the pan. It should be something like, oh yeah, I remember I used to do that. It was kind of nice. I wonder why I stopped. We focus on our story, on our journey. Take ownership of both of those things. They are no one else's, and no one can really touch them or do anything to them if we are awake. Our stories and our journeys. And that is the way to live a really full life. To live out your life, not an idea of your life. Not your culture's, somebody else's idea of your life, but your very own. And that is worth fighting for. It's worth all the nights in Valley Forge, all the dangers, all the difficulties. That's the long game that we are in for. And expressions, outward understandings, languages, traditions, all those things can change. But what we're seeking always remains the same. So stick to that. Focus on that, not so much on these other things that can change. But on the real gnosis, liberating gnosis, enlivening gnosis, living out a full life. Listen to the mystery that changed to Seminar, send upon us. For more information and resources on Gnosticism, visit the Gnosis Archive at gnosis.org. That's GNOSIS.ORG. And the Gnosis Institute at gnosisinstitute.org. If you would like to continue receiving these podcasts, please consider a voluntary subscription of either $13 or $25 a year. That's $1 to $2 a month to make it possible to continue to provide this service. Thank you.